The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Well, now joining me in studio is Brenda Power, columnist with the Sunday Independent and the Irish Daily Mail. Brenda, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, you've been looking through the newspapers. I'll bring the headlines to our listeners, first of all. On the front of the Sunday Independent, tax paid on just 2% of vacant homes is their lead story. They also have an Ireland Thinks poll inside, but the headline from that is Fine Gael, now the largest party. The Sunday Times, ministers at war over cuts in next budget. And there's a nice picture of Jemison Gibson Park with Tadhg Furlong over the win yesterday in Sydney. And Lyra McKee dreamt she was shot, says Sister. The Irish Mail on Sunday, dealers target pensioners to enforce family drug debts. And Tay-Tay's $50 million wedding. And the Business Post, AIB chief warns investors losing faith in Ireland's energy boom. We are so tardy about giving permission for windmill construction, be it offshore or onshore, that investors are losing heart. Now, Brenda, you've been looking at the papers in more detail. What have you found?
That's right. Well, I mean, the first thing I suppose that jumps out is that poll and the suggestion that Fine Gael is now the most popular party in the country at 20%. Sinn Féin slipping into second place at 19, Fianna Fáil 17, excuse me, and the Social Democrats at 12, Independents 11. I guess the lesson from that, Pat, is that the less visible you are, the more popular your party is going to be.
Because I've seen little of Simon.
Very little of Simon. In fact, the only time I saw Simon come out in the last while was yesterday to wish Taylor Swift every congratulation on her wedding. So it seems to be, and I think that is possibly explains perhaps the popularity of Holly Cairns, who is the most popular party leader at 40%, because she disappeared for quite a while on maternity leave, during which time her popularity soared. I believe she's about to leave shortly again. So I guess we can see her skyrocket in popularity. Really, it seems the more people see of you, the less they like you in politics.
It's hard to make a sense of some of the questions, and others are very obvious. I mean, do you support or oppose the three euro so-called Temu tax on non-EU online purchases? 55% say no, we don't want to pay more. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Who's ever said, yeah, I love tax? More of it, please. Border poll, 53% in favour of a united Ireland. Decriminalisation of drugs, surprise, surprise. People are opposed to that, 57%. Mm-hmm. That was the recommendation of the Dáil Justice Committee or the Oireachtas Justice Committee. Something like, is it 50% of, see the figure, who believes that a large percentage believe that there's been an increase in crime linked to immigration. 55%.
On Joe Duffy's remarks about a Gardaí on a hunch could seize a phone from someone they saw on the street. And do you agree with Joe? 72% say no.
Yeah, I thought those remarks were taken slightly out of context. I was at that dinner to commemoration for Veronica Guerin last weekend. The point he was really making was that we shouldn't prioritise the privacy of the suspected perpetrator over the security of the public. I mean, Gardaí can already do a lot on a hunch. I mean, do you remember Inspector Columbo operated entirely on a hunch? An awful lot of investigations actually begin on a hunch. So I think perhaps it's called reasonable suspicion or probable cause in the United States. So, I mean, I think maybe that issue is something that people maybe don't know as much about in terms of the restrictions that there actually are on Gardaí being able to access metadata in particular.
There's a picture of Micheál Martin and Ursula von der Leyen across the top of the Irish Thinks poll. And on the European Union, would you be in favour of or opposed to Ukraine joining the EU? They're massively in favour.
62%. Yes.
And the other one, do you feel that Ireland's holding of the EU presidency for the next 6 months will personally impact you in any way? 75%
No.
Not at all. Now, if they're going to be driving around the capital, they will be.
They will. I mean, it was like Vietnam here on Friday with the helicopters flying overhead. Yeah. But I don't think so. I think Brendan O'Connor is making the point that, did you not stay up to watch the Cypriot celebrations when they took over the presidency of the
And in fact, you know, asking people who was holding the presidency before us. Who knew? Cyprus. And now, Jim O'Callaghan, there's good news and bad news for Jim, I suppose, because when should Micheál Martin step down as leader? And soon-ish is the general verdict.
Yes.
Who would you like to see as the next leader? Jim, 52%. Derek Leary, 17%. Jack Chambers, 16%. Dara Brian, 7%. Norma Foley, 4%. James Lawless, 3%. You'd rather not be mentioned at all than come in with those kind of figures.
So that's
the good news for Jim.
That's kind of a commanding lead, all right. Yeah, I mean, the bad news seems to be his ongoing spat with the legal profession, particularly with solicitors on the Free Legal Aid panel. I mean, I think both sides are so entrenched in this now that this is a battle he really has to win. Effectively, what he is saying is that the current Free Legal Aid system is open to abuse and has been abused in support of his proposal to pay a flat fee to each criminal legal aid solicitor of, I think it's €520 per case, rather than an appearance fee, an initial brief fee and an appearance fee.
The argument they would advance is, look, a blanket fee which covers all our appearances, no matter how long they take, and no matter how many adjournments, et cetera, at €500, whatever it is not enough. You have a counter-argument.
Well, that amounts to, I think, one initial appearance and maybe five subsequent appearances. And when the Department of Justice first proposed this, they said that in circumstances, because they'd obviously done an audit, in circumstances where the accused person is paying for their own defence, the case takes an average of 113 days to resolve and, I think, three court appearances. Where you're paying for it, where the taxpayer is paying for it, it takes over 300 days to resolve and somewhat more frequent appearances. And there was, I know the Daily Mail had a story a while ago about a presentation to solicitors by a Free Legal Aid solicitor advising on how to maximise the income from Free Legal Aid to your firm. And basically the advice was, if you have a client who is on two or three separate charges, you assign each one to a different solicitor on the Free Legal Aid.
So you have Joe Bloggs in there on maybe a shoplifting charge, a public disorder charge, whatever.
And a drugs charge.
And a drugs charge. And you'll have three different solicitors representing this guy. Mm-hmm. Going forward, adjourning, etc. So how long is a piece of string?
You can see how that would mount up. So the Sunday Independent, again, I think it is, has a piece saying that two of the solicitors who are foremost in opposing this earned something like €800,000 for their firms last year from Free Legal Aid.
Not all Free Legal Aid solicitors do as well.
No.
I mean, the gravy train is confined probably to a relatively small number, but that may tell us that we have too many solicitors looking for this business.
It may tell us too that it's time to look at the entire Free Legal Aid system. I mean, you are constitutionally entitled to a defence, but you're not constitutionally entitled to an entirely free defence. And when you have people turning up for their 147th Free Legal Aid funded conviction, you've got to question, is there some point at which you say, look, the state is going to claw back, whether from your income or your social welfare, something towards that as a deterrent. Because if you're turning up in court week after week, and you have to factor in the possibility that for some of those people, there is a number of acquittals that have already been funded by Free Legal Aid as well. At some point, does the state say, look, you know, you're having us on now, and we're going to look for some of that back? I don't think that would be an unpopular proposal, to be honest, and nor an unreasonable one.
But according to Shane Ross, Jim cannot win, and it may dent his chances of leading Fianna Fáil.
But if he did win, I think it would help a great deal. And I would say that a lot of that 52% support for him is based on the perception that what he's doing here is actually got a lot of public support.
Now, Taylor Swift's wedding, it's not something that I was following with great interest, I have to say, but I was aware it happened, and it happened big. You yourself have written a piece.
I have, because I have three Swifties. I've had three daughters who have been fans of Taylor since their school days, when she was in her country and western phase and singing, aged 16, about wanting to get married, believe it or not. She has a song about walking down the aisle. So, like almost like a vicarious mammy. I've been hoping, God, I hope this one works out for her. And we've seen plenty of boyfriends come and go over the years. So I'm delighted that, that it all went swimmingly. And of course, as we know, an Irishman, Jonathan Anderson from Derry, son of Willie Anderson, the rugby legend, designed her wedding dress. All we know so far, family apparently know nothing about it. They only discovered at the final fitting that he was the chosen one for this, I mean, the wedding of the century, basically, certainly an American royal wedding. And the only description we have of the dress is that it was long and white. I was just thinking, that is how every man who's ever been to a wedding described the bride's dress when he came home and was asked what it looked like, long and white. So it didn't tell us a whole lot. So, but no doubt, because she is very good, in fairness, at
but
sharing
with her family.
But your
piece is about all weddings are the same, really.
They're
whether
same.
They're $50 million weddings in Madison Square Garden.
I bet there was somebody who got stuck talking to the groom's father's next-door neighbour's golfing buddy, trying to make small talk over the canapes. No question.
And also, you book a venue, it can take 100 people, so you draw up the list of 100, and who's 101, who's 101?
Yeah.
Now, when she's inviting 1,000, and you don't make it into her top 1,000, and you think you're a friend?
Do you feel personally slighted? I kind of do. I've been following her for ages, and apparently the venue could have seated 22,000. We would definitely have made the cut then, Pat.
Now, there's a story that the Mail has been covering all week, and which features again in the Mail on Sunday, and this is a political story from Galway.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I suppose what it tells us about the political commitment to information and misinformation, disinformation, but also about journalism. Basically, the Mail are the only ones who seem to have been following this. It's about their Galway West by-election candidate, Helen Ogbo, who did very well, Nigerian woman, and she's now the mayor of Galway. But there are, I suppose, inconsistencies or inaccuracies in the narrative that we have been offered up to now. Basically, she has claimed on her own website in 2006, "My family and I moved to Ireland seeking safety and a fresh start after the tragic loss of my husband." This was also repeated by Ivana Bacic, the party leader, when she was urging her to the support for her earlier in the year. It was repeated in a newsletter. It was repeated by Ciarán Ahern in his Instagram during the by-election campaign. And actually, Miss Ogbo herself shared a video on her YouTube channel of a Nigerian news outlet also repeating the fact that she came to Ireland in 2006 following the assassination of her husband. Except her husband was alive and well when she came to Ireland in 2006. He was assassinated in 2010. Now, the question is, who knew about this? When was it addressed? And what efforts were made to change it? The Labour Party are saying they only recently found out. Helen Ogbo apparently claimed that she's known as long as a year ago and couldn't do anything about it. But the Daily Mail questioned this, raised this with her last Friday week with the Labour Party press office. No response. No response Saturday, no response Sunday. I think they responded on Monday claiming that they had replied within one working day. As you know, Pat, publicly funded political parties' press offices work on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis. So that's ludicrous. Eventually, a Daily Mail reporter went to Miss Ogbo's house and knocked on her door. That's called journalism, by the way, for those who rely on social media and press releases brought to their desks to pursue a story. The Labour Party objected to this. They didn't get an answer then. The Labour Party objected to this. And get this, several newspapers published the Labour Party's complaint about a journalist doing his job, but didn't actually follow up the story. So we're still not clear on who knew that Mr. Ogbo was alive and well in 2006 when his wife and children moved here, and why this story was not amended until the Daily Mail raised it, at which point it seemed it was quite possible to take down the website overnight. So I think there are a lot of questions here about the nature of journalism, but also about commitments of certain parties to misinformation and disinformation and what the public is actually being told.
Now, there are lots of stories, small stories here and there, but I think all the newspapers mark the departure of Martin Nocton. We lost Martin Nocton, and we lost David Andrews.
David Andrews, yes.
Two significant figures.
Two very significant figures. And you can, you know, looking at the coverage of David Andrews' funeral, I suppose you see the people and the faces. And of course, he was Ryan Tuberty's uncle.
Yeah, and Dave McSavage, who used to appear regularly with me on The Late Late Show, his son, Barry Andrews, of course.
Political dynasty, a big name from his day. It's passed on.
UK politics, bits about Andy Burnham, Farage's path to power. I think the Sunday Times goes big on where the money came from. So that'll be a good read, which I hope to have later on.
Did you see, I can't remember who the former Labour big shot is calling for a return to the EU, calling on the party to rejoin. They said that's the future for Britain. I think that was something that Burnham certainly has said he'd be open to considering.
I wonder, they don't like to admit they were wrong.
They don't. They're going to pin their
balls.
It's a
bit like going against a jury, you know. Yeah. Judges in the Court of Appeal are reluctant to overturn juries. And in the same way, governments are reluctant to overturn the people.
Well, I mean, the question of another referendum 10 years on wouldn't be an outlandish suggestion.
We've done it.
We have done it.
Brenda, thank you very much for joining us. I hope it's going to be a nice day outside. We don't know yet. It's unfolding. But
it's
Brenda Power,
columnist
with the Sunday Independent and the Irish Daily Mail, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
With Timber Living Log Cabins.